Hi again, everybody, and welcome to Amarin's Podcast, Episode 104. It's Tuesday, July 29th, 2008. The opening national anthem today is that of the Faroe Islands, because today is the anniversary of the death of St. Olaf at the Battle of Svalbard, or however you pronounce that, in 1030. And today is also the day that the Faroese Parliament opens. The festival, which includes a rowing competition and so on, begins on the evening before, on the 28th, which is convenient because much of the world is still on the 28th as I record this. Now, I picked that for a particular reason. Today is also National Anthem Day in Romania, and I could have picked that. But I picked this one because of Kim Beaver. Now, many of you know Kim Beaver. Kim Beaver is sort of a blog superstar these days and the sort of uber podcast listener in the world, who has had many kind and wonderful things to say about a number of podcasts, including my own, of course. But I actually have in my life met a Faroese. When we were living in the Waikato, in Paro, I went to the launch of the Labour Party campaign in the last New Zealand elections, which were in 2005. And one of the people there, there was an older couple, they happened to have a Faroese exchange student who was attending the high school in their town. And so they brought him along to witness this. Now, personally, I think that's a fantastic thing to do with an exchange student, to let them see part of the political process of another country up close and personal, because, of course, the prime minister was there, the prime minister's cabinet was there. And it's the sort of thing that I certainly never experienced in America, much less in another country. But he was the first person from the Faroe Islands I'd ever met. And as a matter of fact, up until then, I really wasn't too sure where the Faroe Islands were, I have to admit. But in case you don't know, the Faroe Islands are on the border between the Norwegian Sea and North Atlantic. They're roughly equidistant from Iceland, Scotland, and Norway. Now, they're an autonomous province of the Kingdom of Denmark and have been since 1948. They had been part of Norway, but they were politically detached from that in 1814. At the moment, the islands have a huge amount of autonomy, except in areas of foreign affairs and the legal system, which are now handled by Denmark. There is apparently a segment of the population that favors full independence from Denmark, and another segment that wants to keep things as they are. I don't know all of the ins and outs of the political situation in the Faroe Islands. I just know that it exists. The current population of the Faroes, depending on who you listen to, is 48,000, 49,000, somewhere in there. And they have close traditional ties to Iceland, Shetland Islands, Orkney Islands, Outer Hebrides, and Greenland. And one of the things I thought was interesting when I was doing a little research on this is that the Faroese language is descended from Old Norse, as are most of the Scandinavian languages. And it's part of the Germanic group, which, of course, German and English are also descended from. And as it happens, over at Kim Beaver's Lodge, there's a, which, by the way, is kimbeaver.blogspot.com, there is a YouTube video of how to speak Faroese. And if you listen to it, and actually even look at some of the words, you can see the similarities to other languages. Now, of course, I studied German in the past, and so I can see a lot of the similarities, words, and how they could have changed. Now, when I was much younger, I studied linguistics, actually, just for one term at university. And among other things, I came across this thing that was called Grimm's Law of Consonantal Shift. Not continental, consonantal. And essentially what that's about, Grimm, by the way, are the brothers Grimm, because in addition to writing those stories, they were also linguists. And they devised a theory to explain how languages that were isolated from one another would shift over time, what would explain how pronunciations change over time from the same language that is geographically separated. And some of these sort of things you can see in play if you look at Faroese, for instance, how it is similar to but different from, say, Norwegian or German or English or what have you. And yet there's this little thing that's, oh, that's kind of familiar. And it just goes to show how so many of these languages are so intertwined, as, I mean, the history of Europe is obviously very intertwined. And, of course, England itself, from which most Americans are descended one way or another, was at various times occupied by the Vikings. And so there's this interplay going on here between the Germanic tribes, the Scandinavian tribes, and so on throughout history, which is a little bit off the subject because we're talking about the Faroe Islands. The main thing is, when I saw that July 29th was the national holiday of the Faroe Islands, naturally, I had to include that as the national anthem today. Because, I mean, what else was I going to do? And that's actually the title of this episode, which I'm not even going to begin to try to pronounce. But depending on what sort of computer you're using, that title may or may not have turned out correctly. And I'm sure it won't turn out correctly in the notes that accompany the MP3 file. But hey, points for trying, right? That is actually the last of the national anthems because today's the last podcast episode for July. So I hope you've enjoyed that little diversion into something different. Rather than playing pop songs or just ordinary music, I just decided to do something a little bit different. And it, of course, all happened by accident because I happen to have a podcast on the 1st and the 4th. But be that as it may. Well, today's is another snack-sized episode, and I thought what I would do basically is just do sort of a catch-up on some of the things that have been going on lately. If you visit my blog at all, emrins.blogspot.com, you may have seen my photos of some rain-streaked windows and things. And that's because over this past weekend, there was predicted to be a really terrible subtropical depression that would be a weather bomb. And a weather bomb is essentially a very slow-moving storm that basically stays in one place for a long time and dumps a lot of rain and has high winds and so on. And as it turns out, there were parts of the country that had really bad weather. In Northland, for instance, they had hurricane-force winds. In other parts of the country, they had power that was knocked out and severe flooding. But here in Auckland, not so much. We actually had very little storm weather. And actually, the storm ended up being much nicer to us than the one a year ago. We had a weather bomb in July of last year, which blew a tree into the house, which, of course, I talked about on the podcast. Well, this year there was nothing like that. The winds were actually died down by the evening, and the rain was just ordinary rain, and then, in fact, I think for a good chunk of the night there was no rain. So it really was pretty mild for us. Now, of course, we're in a fairly sheltered position where our house is, so that probably had something to do with it. In other parts of Auckland region, power was knocked out, and in some areas they were saying it could take 2 weeks to restore it, in the more remote areas of West Auckland and up in the Waitakere Ranges. And I also know that down in parts of the Waikato, not far from where we used to live, some power was out for 26 hours. Now that we're actually where we used to live did not lose power, but other areas not so far away did. It's a sort of arbitrary. Well, as it happens, we're now in the middle of another tropical depression. The Met Service, which is the weather predicting people, says that this one will probably be not as severe as the one this past weekend, but it will affect a bigger area. Now, the thing is that the areas that suffered badness from the storm really did get, apparently did get a bit of a hammering. And in some areas, it apparently really was the worst storm in 10 years, as it was being predicted to be. So we're a little bit dubious about this one because we're thinking, well, the last one wasn't as bad for us as they said it was going to be. Maybe this one is going to be worse than they say it's going to be. But so far, it hasn't been terribly windy, but it has rained a lot. And this is supposed to go on until about the middle of tomorrow afternoon sometime when it's supposed to ease up. But they're still predicting rain basically for the entire week, which is kind of what rain is like in, I mean, what winter is like in Auckland. A lot of rain and not too terribly cold, but there can be some bad storms. But this isn't as bad as it can get. Around Christmas time, or actually more like New Year's time, is the prime season for cyclones, which are hurricanes in the southern hemisphere. Now, New Zealand hasn't been hit by a bad one in a very long time. The last one would have been Bola, I believe. And that was in the 80s, I think. Late 80s, early 90s, somewhere in there anyway. Long before I got here. And sooner or later, one is going to hit here, of course. Although it's a very big ocean and a very small country, so maybe the odds are better that we won't get hit. But that's the cyclone season, which is equivalent to hurricane season. It happens here generally around the end of the old year, beginning of the new year, somewhere in there. So it actually can get worse than this. But this sort of subtropical depression is more common. Quite frankly, not a whole lot else has been going on because I just haven't felt well all weekend. That's because all week, but weekend. Since probably about Thursday, I started feeling really bad. Nigel's mom arrived Friday afternoon, and we didn't really do much. We watched some TV and talked for a while. I did go to run an errand, took her with me. But beyond that, we stayed home. We had Thai takeaways for dinner that night rather than going out because the weather was predicted to get worse, although it turned out it was Saturday before it actually hit. And Saturday, we didn't do very much. Sunday, we didn't do very much, and she went home on Monday. So it was a really quiet weekend, but it was stressful for her, so that's always a good thing, I think. And I suppose the good thing is we didn't really spend a lot of money. But yesterday, I took back two decoders we had for our pay TV service, which actually wasn't so much to do with cutting the budget as it was because we weren't using them. Our pay TV service is a satellite service, and each time we've upgraded, they've offered us a deal. When we upgraded to the digital satellite, they offered that we could keep a UHF decoder, which only had like five or six channels, for a pittance of what it used to cost. So we thought, oh, why not? And then when we upgraded to the service called MySky, which is similar to TiVo, it's a DVR system, they said, well, you can keep your old decoder for $25 a month. And so we did. We kept it in the master bedroom. Well, a while ago, we had the dish upgraded so it can receive HD signals. You have to get a special decoder for that, which we haven't done. But when they did that, it knocked out the old decoder, which wasn't set up for that particular equipment. And so it hasn't worked since. And so we thought about ringing them up and tuning it, and we thought, well, why? Because the only thing we ever turned the TV on in the bedroom for was to watch the news in the morning. And that was about it, because if we were going to watch a movie, there's a DVD player and a VCR attached to the TV. Why would we want to bother with broadcast television? And so we decided we'd get rid of it, and we're going to get a box for the free-to-air digital satellite system called Freeview. It uses the same dish, actually, as the pay system. And so we'll have digital quality programming in there as well. But it turns out it's going to save us $36 a month getting rid of those two decoders. So I was reasonably happy about that, I have to say. But that's really about all that's been going on. So I'm just going to move right ahead on into comments. And the first comment is actually back in episode 90, which was called Kiwi Customs. And that was episode leading up to the moving to New Zealand episode. And this was just posted last week, and it's from Anonymous, who said, I just ran across your blog, podcast, and randomly started with episode 90. I live in the U.S. and I have two close friends here from New Zealand. Now I finally know why they say, that's all right, when I thank them for something. After 5 years as friends, they don't stump me too often anymore, but just the other day, I had to stop the conversation and ask what in the world a chili bin was. Looking forward to hear more from you. And I said, thanks, Anonymous. I have to warn you, though, after nearly 13 years in New Zealand, I still sometimes hear a word or phrase that I don't know. Feel free to ask questions anytime. And that is so true. There are some really unusual things in Kiwi slang that still catch me by surprise. But the one that, it doesn't jolt me very often, but there was one not so many years ago, about 4 or 5 years ago, that really stopped me in my tracks. The is at work, and the department supervisor was leaving, going past the manager's office, and said, write him off, see you later. And the manager called out, hooray, Keith! And I was thinking he was cheering that the guy was leaving. I found out later that that's a way of saying, see you, bye, cheerio, you know, whatever. That just really stopped me in my tracks. Unfortunately, I haven't heard anything like that since. Not that jarring anyway. But now on to episode 101, which was Getting to Stay. And that's basically where I talked about how I got to be a permanent resident in New Zealand and ultimately a citizen. And Reed said, I can confirm the process is simpler for a married couple. We provided a copy of our marriage license and a written statement scribbled on a scrap of paper at the NZIS office, and I supported her application as my partner. That was it. And I said, thanks, Reed. I thought it might be the case, that it's simpler for married people. I wonder, though, if it's equally easy for same-sex couples who have registered relationships equivalent to New Zealand civil unions. The main reason we had to jump through so many hoops was that we had no other way to prove our relationship was real. So I bet that people in civil unions or equivalent would have an easier time of it than we did. And what I'm thinking in particular are people who are married in the state of Massachusetts or the state of California or in Canada, or they have a, say, UK civil partnership or whatever it's called, I've forgotten. Since they have a legal document to prove that they're in a relationship, I imagine that they have an easier time of it than somebody like me who had no way to prove that we were in a relationship apart from providing all of those bank statements and letters and photos and whatnot that we had to do. Now, I don't know if that's actually true because I haven't investigated. Maybe I'll look into that and let you know. But I have a feeling that that's probably the case. And now on episode 102, which was Becoming Kiwi. And that's, of course, where I was talking about the process of becoming assimilated, essentially. And first up was Archer, who said, "That's so cool that New Zealand is adding all those categories to their census. At some point, the U.S. needs to start learning things from New Zealand." And I said, "I think it's mostly because being gay is much less of a big deal here than in the U.S. While gay people in the U.S. are making progress toward acceptance, in New Zealand, it's much further down. New Zealand is much further down the track." And I think that is probably the single most important thing I could stress about all of this, that in New Zealand, it's not a very big deal being gay. There are times when it is. There are times when it comes up. There you can read homophobic things in New Zealand websites as well. But overall, and generally speaking, it's just not as much of a big deal as it still is in most of the U.S. And of course, there are exceptions. There are parts of the U.S. where gay and lesbian people are much more accepted than they are in other places. And I know that. Everybody knows that. But my point basically is that the reason why things are better in some ways here in New Zealand for gay and lesbian people, and bisexual and transgendered, of course, is that the society in general is more relaxed about it. It's the society isn't so much relaxed because things are better. Things are better because of society, because the society is relaxed, if you know what I mean. One came from the other. Because New Zealanders in general have a pretty laid-back attitude and don't really care that much what other people are doing as long as they're not hurting anybody and, you know, I suppose doing it out in the streets and frightening the horses. And next up was Eris, who said, "I always thought that Americans get a hard time about geography. I know some of it's justified, but I assume that in any country you'll find those who don't know the first thing about geography. I finally got to last week's podcast 102, and I very much like to thank you for mentioning my photos. I'm glad you like them. Oh, and you said my name correctly, and that's always a bonus." And I said, "You're absolutely right, and some Americans know a lot about geography. As is often the case, the whole of America is treated like its poorest educated elements. But I think the problem would be helped by higher requirements in schooling and if Americans traveled more. I definitely like your photos and the variety, too. Glad I got your name at least somewhat right." And about the whole geography thing, I certainly don't mean to imply that all Americans are bad at geography, because I know plenty who aren't. I was basically talking about the reputation for not being particularly, well-educated about geography. And I think what I mean about the whole education thing is that the requirements for geographic knowledge have been lessened over the years. And I really think America would be better off if more were required, more geographic knowledge were required. I mean, there are a lot of things that should be taught. There are a lot of things that could be taught. But knowing a bit about the world would have to be a good thing in this modern interconnected age, I would have thought. But anyway. But now moving on to episode 103, which was called Different Ways, and it was essentially about how New Zealand does things differently than in the U.S. There were two comments, both of them I responded to together, so I'll just read them one after the other. And first was Archer, who said, "I hope you're feeling better." And then Roger Green said, "Ditto. Also, you'd better do your VP picks on your next political podcast, because I doubt that both candidates will wait until the respective conventions to announce." And I said, "Thanks, guys. I am feeling a bit better now, though colds do seem to hang around longer than when I was younger. We'll definitely talk about the whole VP thing in that political podcast on Friday. And first about the cold, I am feeling somewhat better, but I'm certainly not 100% yet. And it does seem that colds are worse as I get older, or at least don't clear as quickly as they did when I was younger. But maybe it's just my imagination, I don't know. But the next political podcast is, of course, on Friday, and Jason will be joining me again, and we actually have a special announcement about that. But I'll remind you again at the end of this episode, because right now I have a phone message.
Hi, Arthur, it's Eric West from the Beat San Francisco. Not defunct yet, just on break. But I just wanted to make a comment on what you mentioned in your last podcast about people not being especially in the U.S., not traveling outside of even their hometown. I'm a military brat, so I've lived all over the world and was brought up mainly in Europe before we came back to the U.S., and I've lived in 28 states and 8 countries. Well, one of the things I learned that was kind of troubling was when I was going to college in Hawaii, that most of the kids that were in high school had never left their island, much less their side of the island, much less the island. So there were some kids that had never been to the north shore of Oahu. There were some kids that had never left the island. It's unfortunate, but that's the way it is. There's people that still have not been more than maybe 50 miles away from where they've lived, and that is just unfortunate. And, yeah, Buffalo, a suburb of New York City. Whoa. Anyway, thanks for the show. Keep them coming. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Thanks for that, Eric. And it's sort of... I'm not surprised, actually, because I knew people who lived most of their lives within 50 miles of the place that they were born. And actually, for a while, I was very similar to that, because in Chicago, I was probably born 50 miles from the place I lived, maybe. I'm not really sure. I never really looked on the map, but probably not much farther if it was. And although I've traveled overseas by that point, and I went to school in southern Illinois, several hundred miles away, nevertheless, I still was living 50 miles, roughly, from the place I was born. So when I decided to go away, move away, I wasn't kidding. But I know that there are other people who are like that, and it goes back to what I was saying earlier. I think if people traveled more, that would certainly help a lot. It would be nice if they would live elsewhere from time to time, or for a little while anyway. But at the very least, if they traveled more and saw more of the world, I really do think it would help. But I'd also like to say happy birthday to Eric, because his birthday is just passed. And naturally, there's a link to Eric's podcast, The Beat San Francisco, on my site, airmanspodcast.com. But that's it for today, everybody. I just wanted to give you little updates on some things that have been going on, and to help salute the Faroe Islands on their National Day. But that's it for today. And Friday's episode is a political podcast with Jason. So tune back in then. But that's it for today, everybody. Bye. You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amarins Podcast at amarinspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at arthur@amarinspodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. listener line on 206-339-8413. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.